This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, we got stuff to get into this hour. Some breaking news from a football perspective involving the ACC. We'll get into that. But the NCAA men's basketball tournament, front and center, Wes. There's already people whispering down the hallways about how we're going to do this and what needs to be done and the seven tests that you've alluded to many times about how difficult that possibly could be. We've already got some coaches hinting about possibly opting out of their respective conference tournaments, how that's going to play itself out. Hey, I know it's late January, but you do need to have these kind of conversations to prepare for March.
Yeah, and Dan Gavitt is, of course, in charge of the Division I Men's National Championship for basketball, has been working with the NCAA in the vice president's role. He has been at the forefront of college basketball season, working with the oversight committee on several issues. He appeared on the Field of 68 podcast with Jeff Goodman and Rob Dowster yesterday and offered these comments about what the atmosphere potentially would look like at the NCAA tournament and what happens if there's a positive.
There's no reason to believe that a team will be knocked out if there's a single positive case, as long as they're following the medical protocol in a very disciplined way, because contact tracing should not result in what we've arranged here to knock out an entire team. As long as masks are worn, 6 feet of physical distance at all times, not eating, and having meals, in an undisciplined way. But again, that's going to get down to the team. If it's a positive test, I mean, it's isolation for at least 10 days, if it's a close contact, then, it could be upwards of 14 days. There is a chance that if it's a close contact that you can test out after 7 or 10 days, depending on where we are in the tournament. But to your specific question, it's not really an event that you can pause or postpone very easily, right?
No, so, you're right.
We're going to provide an incredible environment and the testing necessary to make sure that everybody's healthy and safe. And then it's up to the teams to do the right thing.
Hope and pray is what it immediately comes to mind when I hear all that stuff. I hope we can pull this off, Wes. This is not going to be easy. It's not. Who knows? Who knows how this is going to play out? But we've got to get to the finish line. And I rattled off all the financial numbers from the NCAA from a year ago. What happens when you do not have the tournament? And it is not pretty. That organization lost $56 million on their books last year. The NCAA men's basketball tournament basically pays for everything. Everything. And then some. So you got to have it. So you just got to figure out a way. You got to be flexible. We've talked about that ad nauseum. That is not going to change between now and March.
Can we just visit a couple of things here on this? And I know we're going to ride this thing all the way through, right? This is going to be something we talk about, revisit, come back to again as we move through the month of February and certainly on into March. Okay, the 7 negative tests. You've heard me say that how many times already? A dozen or so?
Seven
times. Okay, the 7 negative tests is one thing. We're going to get to more of the opt-out discussion at some point, I'm sure. Remember Jeff Capel, Chris Mack had comments earlier this week from the ACC perspective. Now we're hearing a positive, but the way we're setting this up should not affect or take a team out. Okay, well, then how are we setting this up? I mean, I know we're talking about, we don't want to use the word bubble, but we certainly are doing everything towards a bubble, it sounds like, right? I mean, we're putting it in a basically close proximity, the entire event. We're requiring 7 negative tests going in. Well, then what are the rules once you get there? Because it sounds like that you're going to sit in your hotel room 16 hours a day. Maybe 20 hours a day.
I don't think it's any different than when you're playing during the week. And we've seen how disruptions take place. You hope that you do all the right things. I think every team's trying to do that. But unfortunately, tag, you're it. I mean, this is a virus we're dealing with. I'm telling you, you could give me all the reasoning that, hey, here's the protocol. And it's good that they've at least given it some thought. I give the NCAA all the credit in the world that, thank goodness, this is an event that you must do. This has to happen. There is no plan B. It has to happen. So they've given it some thought. So a tip of the hat on that front. But this isn't going to be easy, Wes. And to sit there and say, well, this is an event that can't have postponements and cancellations. Well, I mean, no disrespect. COVID ain't worried about any of this stuff, right? COVID don't care. I kept saying it all during the football season. COVID doesn't care what you're ranked. COVID doesn't care what your school colors are. So, again, these schools are doing great jobs to keep their student-athletes as healthy as possible. But it still doesn't mean you can't have disruptions. As a matter of fact, in the ACC, there is only one team in the ACC in men's basketball that has not had a postponement or a cancellation. And that would be the one team that probably could use it. And that is Miami, because they've been so banged up and injured. Everybody else in the league, as of January the 27th, has had some kind of postponement or cancellation. COVID doesn't care. So you can give me all these protocols you want, but to think that you're not going to have some type of disruption would be an incredible achievement for March Madness in Indianapolis with 68 teams, that you're not going to have at least a situation where Team X, regardless of what their seed is, doesn't have a problem. I'm just saying, it's going to be really difficult.
So here's the other question I have. Have we seen a positive test emerge from any team in the ACC at this point that did not impact their schedule? Have we seen anybody have a... Like, he's sitting there saying, well, if you have a positive test, if you maintain all the discipline and the social distancing and everything else, it shouldn't take a team out. Have we seen that where it didn't take a team down, Pac? I don't think we've seen that. Every time we hear of a positive in the Tier 1 group within a basketball program in the ACC, we've had a degree of pause, have we not?
Hope and pray. Listen, I don't know what else to tell you. I hear it, and I'm like, okay, great. But you know what? You do know, in all likelihood, there is going to be at least an instance where a team, a player, a coach, somebody is going to test positive. So what is the plan? Now, hey, if Team X is a 4 seed, doesn't matter what their seed is, they're in. If they get a positive test, hey, I got news for you. This is how this has worked. I mean, I'm just sitting here watching University of Michigan over the weekend. Hey, they got a couple positive tests. Here's what they did. Everybody shut down. And not a team, everybody. So, hey, you know what? I go back to the old Kim Mulkey line. The almighty dollar's at play here. And if you don't think so, you're crazy. The NCAA has to get this done. Period.
Yep. The other news of the day involves the College Football Playoff Committee, and there have been some add-ons. Some people rotate off, others rotate on. We know that each of the Power Five conferences has an active participant on that College Football Playoff Committee. The ACC started with Dan Radakovich. It then went to Todd Stansberry at Georgia Tech as the athletics director. And now NC State Athletics Director and friend of the show, Boo Corrigan, is among five new College Football Playoff Selection Committee members. So congratulations to Boo, who will join us, by the way, later in the week on this show. And we're happy to see that selection made by the CFP, Pac.
Yeah, he'll do a good job. And I've told you, going through that mock process before, it's fascinating. It's not easy to do. This past year was the hardest of all time because we didn't have really any non-conference games of note for the most part. So hopefully we can kind of get back to whatever a normal looks like. And schedule-wise, and speaking of schedules, tomorrow at 9 a.m. here on Packer and Durham, we will unveil the 21 ACC football schedule. But Boo is certainly capable of handling all that stuff. So he'll do a great job. And you know, just go ahead and pencil in Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State, and then you guys can go figure out the fourth team, and we'll go down the road.
Is that what you're going to tell him on Friday?
I am.
Is that how you're going to lead? Yeah, great.
I mean, would I be wrong?
Go ahead and sort out the fourth.
You know, the other day I was on the radio show. I made a note that in the last 5 years, just to show you how crazy football and basketball are in comparison, the last five NCAA men's Final Fours, last five, that's 20 potential teams. We have had 17 different teams make it to the Final Four. The only repeaters were Villanova, Sparty, and North Carolina. And then there's 17 others. In college football, the playoff, the last 5 years, we've had eight different teams. Eight. With five multiple repeaters. Clemson, every year. Bama, you know, you got the drill. Ohio State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame. So it's kind of weird when you get to your basically your Final Four, how different football and basketball have been as far as diversification with teams versus football, which has been the same old, same old. And again, I kid with the whole Bama, Ohio State, Alabama. I mean, Bama, Clemson, Ohio State. But quite frankly, you know, if you bet that way, you'd probably be in pretty good shape the next couple years of those three.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Florida State and Miami tonight. Wes Durham, the Noles have been nothing short of terrific since coming off the pause. And I'll tell you right now, I don't care who you are. If you're going to take your group of talented players and you're going to go play Florida State in Tallahassee, you better bring your lunch because the Noles have been almost unstoppable in Tallahassee. When you go there, brother, I'm telling you, you are in for a long day and or night because Leonard's guys have been they've been unbelievable at home.
Look at the last five seasons. Look at the number on the screen, 70-4. 94.6%, best home winning percentage among Power 5 conference teams. 70-4, Pack.
Not pretty good.
It's crazy. I mean, look at this list.
Now, you always remember Allen Fieldhouse where the Jayhawks never, ever lose. And they're still looking up at Florida State and what the Noles have done at home. Now, again, the Noles have won 21 straight ACC games at home. But 70-4, that is ridiculous.
Yep, sure is. It is. It's ridiculous. That's exactly what it is. And you don't think of the Tucker Center in the way – I mean, go back to the list. You don't think the Tucker Center. You think of Allen Fieldhouse.
That's right.
Breslin Center at East Lansing.
Right.
All these – Cameron, that's on the list. I mean, Purdue, Mackey Arena – Virginia, we talked about that place as a house of horrors. Matthew Knight Arena in Eugene. But at the top of the list is Tallahassee, Florida. Now, you're always famous for the bar bet, right?
Yep.
How much could you clean up on this?
You would, because Florida State gets ignored, whether you're an AP voter or even folks that keep talking about blue bloods and all that stuff. And I thought Leonard's answer about that a year or so ago was, hey, no, we're not a blue blood. We're a new blood. And you better pay attention because Florida State, they're playing in a league where basketball matters too. This is not one of those things that, hey, we're running the show out in the whack. No, you're in the ACC. And when you put up a 70-4 spot and 21 straight against ACC teams at home, you got to have really good players and be really, really well coached. And Florida State checks all those boxes. And just another reminder that, you know, there's Duke, there's North Carolina, there's Louisville, there's Syracuse, there's Virginia, and there's Florida State. And the Noles are no joke. And they've been around for a while. This is not one of those, you know, just come around here lately the last couple of years. They've been good for a long, long time now. They're balling. Yeah. They're balling.
A win tonight, by the way, against Miami would tie them with Duke for the second longest streak of consecutive home court ACC wins. The Blue Devils had 22 in a row. From 2001 to 2004, from 1997 to 2000, Duke won 26 straight. But a win tonight at 6 o'clock on ACC Network by the Seminoles would tie that Blue Devil group of like J.J. Redick and crew from 01 to 04. Mark, here's the other part, too. The pause from COVID, and you've mentioned the dominance, winning games by almost 18 a game. They've also created a variable on their team that it could be a different guy every night. That's the other thing that's starting to emerge about Florida State. We talk about Raekwon Evans. We talk about Raekwon Gray. We could talk about MJ Walker. We could talk about Scotty Barnes, Anthony Polite, Balsa Koprivica, Sadar Calhoun. There you go. Look at that list. Last six games.
Yeah, that's when you're a head coach and you're watching tape and you're like, yikes. I mean, you can't really just circle one player and say, hey, we got to shut down fill in the blank because 2 minutes later, Leonard's putting another wave of dudes in that can play. And they don't mind it. You know, the thing that's so impressive about Florida State is that they have bought into the fact that, you know what, we're all going to get our minutes. So when you're out on the floor, you got to go 100 miles an hour. And they do. They play hard. They play great on both ends of the floor. And right now, they're just shooting the lights out of it. And that combination, that's hard to beat. And right now, Florida State is hard to beat.
Mm-hmm. Miami, by the way, lone conference victories against Louisville. Pac said this earlier. It's a storyline now, unfortunately, for Jim Larranaga's team. It's about who's healthy and who's ready to go. They got Anthony Walker back, but they're going to miss Rodney Miller. Walker has been hurt. They've also got some other injuries. Chris Likes is on the shelf. Not really a projected return date yet for the star guard. It's been a storyline all year long. Isaiah Wong has had a really good year. Harlan Beverly's helped out. They've had guys step up, but Timberlake on the shelf. Walker came back. There's just all sorts of little storylines regarding injury with Miami. And, Nasir Brooks, Olaniyi has come on, the transfer from Stony Brook. But those three guys right there you've seen have, in the last five, been the heart and soul of what Miami has done offensively.
And by the way, for the record, Miami did win at NC State, much to the chagrin of Wolfpack Nation, right? Just pointing that out. They knocked off Louisville and NC State. But, Wes, the three winningest basketball coaches at Miami, do you know who they are?
Jim Larranaga.
That's one. He's number two.
Bill Foster. Leonard Hamilton.
Number three. So the two guys tonight are in the top three.
Is Jerry Hale the other one?
Bruce. Bruce Hale.
Bruce Hale, rather. I'm sorry. Bruce Hale. Bruce Hale, who coached Rick Barry.
That's it. You got to go that far back. But how ironic. The two guys on the floor tonight, two of the top three all-time winners at Miami, Leonard Hamilton and Jim Larranaga. And I keep telling you, I think Larranaga has done a great job with this team. And I know people look at the record and go, well, Pac, what are you talking about? Hey, you got to look deeper with the Canes because they have been – there's not another team in the league even close to the injury-riddledness of what Miami's going through, not this year, but the last couple years. And his guys just go out there and they play as hard as they can. If they were 100% healthy, I'm telling you, they'd still win a bunch of games in this league. But they are so beat up. And I gave you that stat earlier of the 15 teams in the ACC. Miami's the only one, the only men's team, who's not at a postponement or a cancellation. And like I said, if there was one team in the league that could use a couple weeks off just to get everybody healthy, it's Miami. But they've just not been able to catch that break from that perspective.
Who is Jerry Hale, by the way?
I don't know. Maybe a real estate guy. Maybe he's one of those guys that called me on Friday looking for a new house. I don't know. I don't know who Jerry Hale is.
I got it. I found it.
There's a
he
Steve
was a
Hale,
basketball coach.
Steve Hale. Played at
he
Carolina,
coached at
right?
Oral Roberts. That's why I said Jerry Hale. He coached at Oral Roberts in the 70s. That's what I was. Bruce Hale. And I'm telling you. That's what happens to me. I hate this stuff sometimes.
There's a Steve Hale, right?
Had I know Steve Hale. Yeah. He was from Steve Hale was from Jinx, Oklahoma, wore number 25 at Carolina. Right. I know who Steve Hale
Full
is.
Full head of hair.
He's like a doctor. He's a doctor. Now he had great hair. Yeah. Steve Hale had great hair.
Yeah.
He had far better hair than you had in college, and you think you had good hair in college.
Well, I didn't care. I was just looking for something cold to drink.
All right. Now, Steve Hale, all right? Number 25, Jinx, Oklahoma. Was his dad Jerry Hale?
I don't know. I don't know.
Wait, hold on.
Is this
We're going to go 6 degrees real
is this
quick.
6 degrees? All right.
Steve Hale's dad was Jerry Hale. That's why I said Jerry Hale. I knew it. Not Bruce Hale, who coached Rick Barry, who is one of the three winningest basketball coaches in Miami history. I went Jerry Hale, who is Steve Hale's dad. That's it. Hale is now a doctor, by the way.
Who's from Oklahoma, who was also from the same state that produced Mark Price, that went to Georgia Tech, which, of course, was eventually broadcasted by Wes Durham, whose dad was, what are you doing?
Who broadcast Steve Hale's games.
That's it. 6 degrees.
Yeah.
That's how we roll it.
And Billy Packer interviewed Mark Price on the floor at the Omni in Atlanta after Georgia Tech beat North Carolina for a third time to win the 1985 ACC championship.
And by the way, rumor has it that Billy Packer will be on the show later this week.
In studio.
Yeah. How about that? Here in the basement.
Are we going to be on a delay?
No. I'm going to remove the Mark Packer San Francisco Giants cutout, and Billy's going to be sitting right here.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
The Power Hour has Gene Deckerhoff, the legendary voice of the Noles, and getting ready for a Super Bowl broadcast because he handles Tom Brady and the boys. And Myron Metcalf from ESPN, who will make his debut on the program. So we look forward to that. And he's very, very good if you haven't read his work. So that's that deal. So speaking of reading your work, ACC legends, Wes, that leads us to our next guest.
What a treat to welcome Doug Dowdy back to this show. Where's Henley? Let's get Henley in the picture. Yeah, come on, Dowdy. Let's get it straight.
Man, how cool is that dog right there?
Henley was born in Gore, Virginia, which I had never heard of until recently.
Yeah? Is Henley new? How old is Henley?
Henley was born December 7th.
Wow.
And we've had her for about 4 days now, and this is we've had an assortment of pugs. We had Brady for Tom Brady. We had a Harper for Bryce Harper, and then we decided to go the song route, and this is Henley for Don Henley.
Nice. Making their debut. Henley the Hound. Love it. All right, so how's retirement? Man, what's it like? Good, bad, indifferent? You ready to get back to work? What's the story?
Well, I still have one game left. I'll be covering the Virginia Tech game Saturday, I think.
Oh, you better hope so.
Yeah. I'll be double-checking. I think I will be at the game. I've known for a while this would be the last game for me, I know you had Mike Young last week, and I had actually already arranged with Mike that we will be meeting before the game, and he's going to bring popcorn for me. So the two of us will be there eating popcorn 30 minutes before the game.
Very cool.
I could see that becoming an ACC tradition.
Yeah. You bring in the dog? Is Henley pro popcorn yet? Have you found that out? Or is it too young? Too young for Henley.
No, Henley will eat anything.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it works.
Which has not been a good thing to this point.
Yeah. Hey, Doug, obviously the other night, nice moment in Charlottesville and well-deserved. I mean, during a timeout and even in a weird environment with very few people and things like that, the University of Virginia Athletic Department honored you for covering the Cavaliers for as long as you have. I mean, but you've seen this league. That's the thing. I think that, you know, when you think about the fact you've worked in Roanoke since the early 70s, and, I mean, here's the note, nearly 385,000 miles to Charlottesville for football and basketball. I mean, tell me, just give me some perspective on what this ride has been like. I mean, John Swofford retires here soon as the ACC commissioner. You've seen three commissioners, Bob James, Gene Corrigan, and John Swofford.
Well, I was trying to remember all the Virginia coaches the other day, and basketball and football. I was just to change the subject, but it meant a lot to me earlier this week. You may have heard that Mike Krzyzewski was on a call and just out of nowhere gave me an appreciation, which I really appreciated. And what was really interesting to me was it brought me back to when he was hired. And as you both remember, Bill Brill was the guy who hired me. He was a longtime sports editor of the Roanoke Times. He was from, went to Duke, was from Durham, later retired in Durham. And I remember he got me in the office at the Roanoke Times, and he said, "I'd like you to go down and interview the new coach at Duke, Mike Krzyzewski." Well, that was a real treat for me. But what was really interesting was Brill went along with us, and while I was interviewing Mike, Brill was down there listening to the was in the room listening. I don't know if he asked any questions or not, but I thought I was supposed to be interviewing Mike, but it just speaks to the fact that Brill was Duke through and through. I don't think he asked any questions, but he was just there to listen and see what was going on with the Blue Devils. So it kind of came full circuit for me when Mike, out of nowhere on the ACC conference call the other day, just expressed his appreciation, I guess, of my career. But you know, it's good to still have people who were around when I got started.
Doug, you mentioned the last game coming up, which is Virginia Tech, which is fitting, right? I mean, given the fact that you've covered the state, the league, the teams, and all that stuff, how would you describe that rivalry? Because you have a unique perspective from both sides. So how would you describe the battle in the Commonwealth, whether it's on the hardwood, football field, lacrosse, or whatever the sport may be? It's always unique.
I've always felt that there was more of a rivalry in football than basketball. And, you know, I think Virginia Tech had such a long tradition of beating Virginia that I think that extended it. I can't really tell you what the records were in basketball. I think Virginia's pretty much dominated the basketball, and Tech dominated the football in the rivalry. But I do think it was more of a rivalry in football than basketball. And of course, they competed in a lot of other sports as well. They had wrestling last week. So, I don't know that anything surpasses football. And I think there's been more of a rivalry in football than basketball.
Doug, I'm going to ask you, because you've covered the Roanoke area and seen a lot of great high school players in the Roanoke Valley go to the collegiate level, and I know there's a soft spot for Tiki and Rondé Barber just because of your time with them, not only as high school kids, but certainly as college stars and then great players in the National Football League. Give me some of the other stories that stand out. Or other stars
other
that stand out.
Or about the Barbers. Let me tell you about the Barbers. First of all, they were at Cave Spring High School in Roanoke County before when I interviewed them for the first time. And I had a tape recorder and a microcassette recorder back in the day, was all prepared, talked to them for some lengthy period, and then went back and got ready to transcribe or write the story, and I realized I couldn't tell which one was speaking when. I mean, they sounded alike at the time, and I learned my lesson that never interview twins at the same time, because if they sound alike, you're never going to figure out who was talking when. So that was an abiding memory of mine. And I tell you another native Virginian who wasn't necessarily from Roanoke, but was Thomas Jones. And when I was lucky to get in the Virginia Sports Hall of Fame, I went in with Thomas Jones. And what I later spoke to his mom, who pointed out that she was a coal miner, and they had five kids and four of them went to UVA. So Thomas obviously had the great football career at UVA, but just what that family has done is kind of stuck with me.
Doug, given the fact that you know, you're going to come to the finish line here as far as covering sports, you'll still follow it and be part of your life. It's part of your DNA. And you mentioned the fact that you've seen a multiple commissioners in this conference, and John Swofford is about ready to pass the baton to Jim Phillips. How would you categorize what John Swofford has gone through with this amazing run that he's had?
Well, I tell you what stands out to me about John Swofford, and it's not nearly as important as what you just mentioned, but in 1976, when Virginia won its first ACC championship in men's basketball, the ticket manager at UVA was John Swofford. And, you know, he was there then. And then when Virginia won the NCAA championship in Minneapolis, I looked over and there it was. He was sitting in the press audience after the game. And I just was struck by that, you know, he was a Carolina guy, he went to Carolina, but it just struck me that he went the distance with Virginia over his career. And, you know, I'll always remember him as sitting there at the NCAA championship with his wife and being very quiet and, you know, not claiming any credit himself. But I'll always have that picture of him and just the way he supported the league. And I know he was good to Virginia.
It's an interesting time. Tell me what you're going to do now that you're retired, allegedly. I don't believe that word exists for you, but tell me what your next project is. I know you got something because you're not going to hang around the house. That would drive you crazy.
No, I think I'll probably find some area in which to write. I was thinking about, I've been talking to my wife and others about having a Roanoke Sports Hall of Fame, and we've been kicking it around for a while, but it would be pretty good, you know, with the Barbers and J.J. Redick, and I could go on and on. But, you know, that's something I'd like to look into, and I'm not sure that that's something that I'm necessarily would be a great leader of, but it's something we've talked about in Roanoke, and, you know, all sorts of people would be in it, and we'd have a lot of catching up to do.
Hey, by the way, you do know when this retirement thing kicks in next week, the honey-do list gets a little bit longer. You do know that. That's how that works, Doug.
Well, I'd be chasing that Henley around the house. I'll be doing a lot of dog walking in my retirement.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you got a little brown water in your hand, that dog walking thing can last all day long, as I found. It works out real well, to be honest with you.
Unfortunately, I could also be playing some golf, which wouldn't turn out well. But I am a better bowler than I am golfer.
Oh, there's no question about that. Yeah, there is no question. Let me run through this just so people understand. Now, people that have followed the ACC for years and in Southwest Virginia and in the Commonwealth know this. Let me just show you the numbers here. We talk about impact. 10,000-plus bylines in the Roanoke Times, 2,000 college notebook columns, 565 Monday Virginia football pressers, 752 basketball home games, 750 away basketball games, 282 football home, 282 football away, 50 Tech Virginia football games pack, and a half dozen football and basketball coaches at the University of Virginia.
That's
Mr. Dowdy?
That's courtesy of 1976 UVA grad Beth Dowdy, who's had to put up with me for 50 years.
God bless her.
I tell you what, always a pleasure. Congratulations on just an incredible ride. As Dennis Hopper said in Hoosiers, known you for years, known you for tears, my man. You've done a wonderful job.
Well, thanks for having me.
Anytime. Doug Dowdy, 47 years at the Roanoke Times, Saturday Night at the Castle will be his last assignment for that fine publication. We look forward to still having him around. He would be a good guy to compare the history notes. We could play 6 degrees with Doug Dowdy, couldn't we?
We could. Only if he brings Henley, because Chester and Fuller double paws up on Henley, making a debut there. Liked it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Gene Deckerhoff, the voice of the Florida State Seminoles and Tampa Bay Bucks, will join us around 9:15, and Myron Metcalf from ESPN will join us at the bottom of the hour during the Power Hour. That's coming up right around the corner. What's the matter?
Virginia Tech, Notre Dame tonight on the schedule. The two schools played back on the 10th of January, and the Hokies won by 14 points, 77-63. The game tonight at 7, and that first meeting punctuated by a tough night for Nate Leschetsky, by the way. Jalen Cohn came off the bench, did some Jalen Cohn things. Virginia Tech certainly would like to see that. Now, here's a question I have for you. Without Tyrese Radford on the ball club for the time being, does Mike Young plug Jalen Cohn into the lineup? Or, we mentioned this yesterday, Joe Bamisil or Darius Maddox are expected to help fill some of those minutes. Does Jalen Cohn keep his role on the bench, Pack? Remember, he struggled as of late.
Plug
him into the lineup, see how it goes.
I think at this point it's all hands on deck. And losing Radford, you can't spin it. That's a big loss. Virginia Tech's going to have to figure it out. But I tell you what else has to be figured out. Lumen and Cohn, their last two outings have combined to go 2 of 29 from the field.
Right.
That sounds like my lottery picks. 2 of 29. That has to get better, especially given the fact that Radford is now out for the with an indefinite suspension. It's all hands on deck. Everybody's got to step up and kind of elevate their games. But listen, Virginia Tech is going to have a hard time beating anybody if Aluma and Cohn keep giving you 2 of 29. I mean, you're going to have to get some points from those two guys, and they've been really good until this past week. So, again, for Virginia Tech, I still like this club a lot. Mike Young's done a tremendous job. Normally the number 50% is something to keep in mind with, because when opponents shoot 50% or higher, Mike Young's 1-5 at Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. 1-5. So keep in mind, especially Notre Dame, right? They're fresh off of knocking off Miami, shot the ball well. When the Irish shoot the ball well, like most teams, they could be okay. If they shoot the ball well tonight, they're going to have a chance. But Aluma and Cohn have to get back to being what they were before this past week. They've got to play better. Have to.
Just a couple of notes here about guys trying to fill those minutes, right? And I think the combinations is one of the things we pay attention to tonight with Notre Dame and Virginia Tech. How does Mike Young go about finding the minutes, finding the numbers? We said this yesterday. Radford is going to be replaced by a combination of people. Bamisil and Maddox are just the two guys who are front of mind. Darius Maddox has not scored a basket against the ACC. Joe Bamisil hasn't played against the ACC, I don't believe. Darius Maddox played 2.5 minutes the other day at Syracuse, 2 minutes against Wake Forest, 2.5 minutes against Duke. You go back to a player. Now, by the way, I would say, too, that David Gasson is a guy who's an interesting candidate here for minutes, too. But he tends to fall a little more toward the pivot side of things. So Bamisil has not played since December 21st, Pack. I mean, so we're talking about guys that are not in the rotation much, if any, now trying to expect maybe to step in and pick up some minutes. So I don't know how this is going to work out for Mike Young, but it's going to be interesting to watch the combinations tonight.
Yeah, but you know, it's one thing to say, hey, you're going to have additional minutes, but can you produce? The one thing we know about Cohn is he can give you points. He has been explosive. You're going to need to have those guys. I'll go back to, again, you can give me the depth chart all you want. Those minutes are going to obviously go up because there's availability. But Aluma and Cohn have to give you punch. You have to. I mean, Virginia Tech, you know, they're a good club, but when those guys produce, they're a problem. You got to deal with them. So, again, 2 of 29 is not going to beat anybody, and they know it. So I think that's worth keeping an eye on. Again, I go back to Notre Dame's standpoint. When they shoot the basketball, they have a chance to win games. If they don't shoot well, they're going to get beat. And kind of feels like for Mike Bray at home, Like a lot of teams, you got to start holding serve at home. And for Virginia Tech, the flip side again, if you win this game, you start off 6-2 in the league. That would tie their best mark through 8 conference games since joining the league. So a big opportunity for both teams tonight.
Pack, the other thing, too, is Notre Dame in the second half of the last ball game against Virginia Tech was 2 of 19 from the floor.
Yep, get you beat.
2 of 19.
Yeah, you lose. That means L is what that means. You go 2 of 19, I don't like your chances. I don't care who you're playing. That's not good enough, especially the way Mike Bray's teams operate, right? If they don't shoot well, they're not really kind of designed to grind you. They're going to have to make baskets. So, again, important game for Virginia Tech on another road game. This is, what, 3 straight, I think, for the Hokies on the road.
Yeah.
Then they come home, and then they're back on the road again for a couple more. So, you know, you can't hide in this league, man. You're going to have to play everybody. And for Virginia Tech, though, I still like them. They're still an upper third team. But their big guns with a Lumen Cone have to get better and get back on track.
We mentioned Nate Leshefsky's struggles, by the way, in the first meeting with the Hokies. When you look at Nate Leshefsky's numbers, though, talk about a guy who, you know, if Notre Dame had won a couple more ball games, Pack, look at these. He leads the ACC in field goal efficiency, 3-point field goal percentage, and regular field goal percentage.
That has to continue. I mean, hey, listen, the Irish have struggled even with those numbers, right? Even with those numbers, they have struggled. So he's got to stay hot.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Notre Dame and Virginia Tech coming up tonight. 4 good ball games, huh? 4 good ball games.
Accounting will be affected tonight. And that's why I gave a list of 15, my 16.
I really want to take the week off.
You can't take the week off. You can just do it in pencil. You got to figure them out in pencil, and then you start watching. But you know what? I don't think our accounting is going to be messed up at the top. I don't think. Now, of course, Florida State plays tonight. Yeah, they got Miami. Expect him to win. But I think the top is starting to separate itself a little bit. I think Virginia and Florida State the last week to 2 weeks have kind of put a stamp of approval that, guess what? It goes through us. It feels that way.
Some Cavalier fans were calling for our removal from this network last week in accounting.
Please. We're under contract for at least another week. Y'all are going to have to hold on. We'll be walking Henley the dog with Doug in Roanoke in about the next week and a half at our rate, the way we're going.
All right.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.